on the term social. This book often mentions the concept of society. While the meaning of that term herewith is considered to have its usual meaning, an alternative view is probably also worth mentioning. The alleged COVID-19 pandemic is intimately connected with the usual understanding of the term society. When speaking about society, which is more or less a collectivist term, at the same time it cannot be denied that, on a personal basis, everyone digs his own grave without dragging with oneself some abstraction called society. On the other hand, that the denialist statement, quote, "there is no society," does not literally mean that those denying the existence of society have in mind, is proved, for example, by the willingness of these deniers to lead a political party, the latter being in itself a social entity, rather than be set out alone as isolated individuals to fight for their ideas. Otherwise, if we don't give them the benefit of the doubt that their rejection of the notion of society does not exactly literally mean, quote, "there is no society," we should see those society deniers as internally contradictory, duplicitous figures who should not be taken seriously or discussed in the context of a conversation such as ours. But we can abandon such a view of accusing them of outright duplicity by considering the argument on another plane. Since along the lines of their reasoning, the reasoning of the society deniers, separating, for example, health and education from the social, attributing them to the individual, is a natural act of recognizing education and healthcare as an inalienable part of life in its own sense. As such, health and education are unconditional, not functions of compassion, today known as empathy, or public engagement, of market or of no market. By their very nature, health and education preclude discussion of budgets dedicated for them, taking the money for their sustenance for granted, as well as not resorting to considering whether one society is more social than another, having education and healthcare as a measure. Education and healthcare are not subject to the socio, because they're immanent to life. Otherwise, if compassion, empathy, charity, or social justice are foregrounded as determinants of whether society should pay for education and healthcare, this leads to the most monstrous forms of ideology and to political practices used as a screen for such ideologies. The individual has an unconditional right to healthcare and education, just as the individual has an unconditional right to breathe the air freely in order to be alive, without thinking of this breathing activity in market terms, to say nothing of budgets. In this sense, indeed, there are only individuals and their lives. There is no society, and the desire of demagogues to posit social relations as a condition for whether the individual breathe freely these intrinsic elements is ultimately antisocial, if one wants to analyze it on such a plane, however charitable it may pretend to be otherwise. So let monarchies, communisms, fascisms, and postmodernisms, perfected Nazisms, keep to themselves that social concern, from which humans must necessarily free themselves in order to realize themselves as humanity. Humanity first maintains these intrinsic elements at all cost, and only then thinks of allocating budgets and policies for all other aspects. But there is no money available, is the usual retort. There is. And if for some reason there is none left for anything else, all the money having been spent on education and healthcare, humanity would die for that reason alone, not at all be kept half alive with the essential elements of life, including healthcare and education, cut down, in order to live on finances saved from essentials such as healthcare and education for something else far from the true components comprising fundamental humanity. The gist of this idea is that life is its own thing, not the result of someone, quote, coming to the rescue. Least of all a collective, quote, coming to the rescue. In this right to life, the individual is beholden to no one, and to impute that some entity outside the human, some society, must be a prerequisite to the realization of humans' imminent right to life is an extrinsic imputation of imminent slavery. The individual can live alone on an island without enjoying the so-called benefits or dependencies of society. There's a famous juvenile novel written about this occasion, illustrating in a simple way this self-determination. There are also thousands of counterexamples where society enforces a violent anti-compassion, locking the individual alone in a dungeon, and yet the individual survives. Ergo, societal interrelationships of obligations and responsibilities are not life-defining. They are brought in to enslave the individual for the sake of other individuals' individual goals. In other words, it is not the business of other individuals gathered in something calling itself society to decide whether to allow the free existence of integral parts of an individual's life, such as healthcare and education. The individual must receive them unconditionally, without the fate of their reception being decided by a collective. Without the individual to be expected to give anything back, at least by obligation, to the so-called society. Thus, contrary to the post-industrial notion that healthcare and education must be part of some kind of market, engaging in some kind of service economy, the individual should receive healthcare and education just as the individual breathes air to be alive, regardless of the impression on this matter of some so-called society. Social relations are a parasitic appendage of existence. As said, the individual can do without these relations in terms of individual's own existence, in terms of individual's life as such. The social relations are forced upon the individual. It's another matter that beyond the essential components of life itself, there are non-essential ones. Let's leave aside the fact that you can go from New York to Boston in a bullock cart, but a VW will do the same job in the same time as a Mercedes. The latter is more comfortable, but it's not essential to transporting one from New York to Boston. How does the intrusion of the social happen? How do these parasitic pranks get imparted? And how do they enslave the individual? This forced togetherness, forged a society, takes place for a purely animal-like reason, such as what holds together a pack led by a headman. Health sustains life. Education creates the skills to live. They are essential components of existence. Enslaving the other by physically tying their hands and feet and chaining them to the machines or agricultural fields, or by building a society, albeit less tangible to the senses, is not essential. It is expository. Every society exploits its members, ultimately for the sake of its desired or unwanted leaders. Thus, when we consider everyday activity, we need not even talk about a team player, a term which has become fashionable lately, because that is an egregious manifestation of already enslaving collectivism that is the basis of the slavish anti-humanist impediment to natural existence. The division of labor must derive from inner needs and rational understanding of the individuals, with a sense that their activities are indispensable components of a common process, and not be imposed upon them externally by some apparent collective reason, which is always the expression of some individual external dictate. As for the family, the latter is essential. It is inescapable slavery, as is the enslaving compulsion to ingest food or breathe air. It is essential to life. But family, specifically in the sense of the drive and need to continue the species, not in the sense of state, collective, or societal sanction. However, in order for the lineage to continue, individuals must be healthy, properly educated, not necessarily with a Harvard degree, breathe air, take food, and drink water. Finally comes the ultimate, unavoidable limitation, death. But we are talking about natural, unavoidable limitations here, not the additional, imposed limitations coming from something called society. Surely we don't have enough natural hardships, so let us seek to inflict and justify the need for unnatural, collectivist, social hardships as well. I won't discuss here the further scary repercussions of this sordid, quote, informational society. I have discussed the modern horrors of suppression of the individual by society through the digital methods of social ranking in one of my earlier books, No Great Reset. In view of what was discussed above, it is interesting to note that the so-called information society, so much talked about, which is claimed to have taken over the world, turns out in fact to be a, quote, paper tiger, facetiously borrowing the metaphor which Chairman Mao coined on another occasion. Indeed, what is the use of the magnificent body of COVID-19 related information dumped every day on every one of us, since the quality of this information amounts to zero? Massive dissemination of fraudulent information has not only zero quality, but harms society and may even have lethal repercussions. It's not benign at all, deserving only to be brushed off. About what information revolution is that onslaught of talk, since one cannot extract from that flood even one scintilla of information that is worth it? The revolution in blabber is observed, all right. However, all this blabber is for the trash can. Trashy revolution, blasting from every channel of the mass media. This is what the real state of the world is. not to mention the, this time, very direct and effective steps towards the horrifying application of the supposedly rejected science of eugenics, which is now being pushed with new force through modern gene therapy methods and possibly anti-COVID-19 vaccines. This problem, especially its social significance, requires a thorough and competent study, which will point out ways of preventing the use of genetics for political purposes. Although we mentioned it only in passing, the grave consequences of its abuse must hold a primary place in our minds. Deliberate creation through the methods of gene engineering, in effect eugenics, of a master race ruling a multitude of genetically inferior slave humanity is one of the most disgusting and reprehensible ideas in history.